Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I am Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on the 12th. It's 11, 12, 13 today.
What? Unbelievable. Isn't that like days that somebody needs to get married or something like that? Or, you know, isn't that like a big thing when you get married or something happens on one of these days?
Yeah. I got married on 8-8-88.
Really? Is that right?
Yeah. We put it off so I could never forget the anniversary.
Oh, that's good. That's smart. That's a good reason to do so, not just because of the day. That's good.
Yeah.
So what's happening in your neck of the woods? What's going on over there in Cali?
Cali?
Hey, Kelly.
Kelly's a woman's name.
All right.
Nothing is going on. Why? What's the market went up last week, and then now it just seems to be back to nothing.
Yeah, we saw a wonderful jobs number, which we'll get into in a minute. I want to talk about the close to the pin contest because I know everybody's just sitting on there, just on the edge of their seats, wondering, did I win? And this is the last week. This is it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be very upsetting. We have to think of something new and revolutionary to do for the next one that comes up. So here's the deal. So the final week was Caterpillar. And the winner, John C. Dvorak.
How about that?
How do you like that?
Yeah.
5 cents away.
I nailed it.
Unbelievable. So actually, you and I won one each. But, of course, we don't get the prize. But the listener who won, the winner, was Eric G. And he was about 13 cents away. So he's going to win a 30-day free subscription to TriggerPoint Research Pro Edition, about $149 value. And we'll send that over to you. Now, I put together some statistics of the whole thing.
Okay.
Of the whole, you know, the whole event. So here's the deal. On average, as a group, we were 4.2% away from the price. Not so good. You know, in other words, we took all the stocks and said, okay, all these stocks, where was the average and how far away?
4.2% up or down. It has to be one way or the other.
No, it doesn't. It's not a percent like that. It's away from this price. We were trying to get closest to the price.
Oh, I see. Okay, right.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Apple and SodaStream were the worst as a group, 12% away on each.
Hmm.
Apple, both of those came down, actually. The winners on average were 0.06 away from their final price.
Hmm.
The overall closest to the pin, overall competition champion for the absolute closest was Gary N. with his pick on United Technologies. He was 0.01% away. On average, John, you were 3% away from the final price, and I was 2.3%. Your best pick was Cat, which we know, again, 0.6 away, and mine was ExxonMobil. And I was 0.01% away.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was tight. Your worst pick, Soda. My worst pick was NAV, which was why am I having a blank? No, thank you so much. 6.2% away. And we both won one time each. And overall, in cash and prizes, we gave away a total of about $900 or so worth of prizes and subscriptions and books and things like that. The nice guys that we are.
Well, you'd like to keep tabs on all this stuff.
Well, yeah, because if I don't, I'm not going to be able to hit you up for half of it. All right, so let's talk about what happened last week. Last week, we were going into a jobs number, one of the most important economic points because the country's economy, of course, like any other economy, you know, revolves around people making money to spend, and spending money so they can put back into the economy and make it grow and all. And the jobs are the core of all that. So we got the jobs number. Now, going to the jobs number, there was a bit of a concern that we were going to see some kind of a drop off, especially due to the government, you know, the big shutdown, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers were in the 120 range. That was expectations. You know, maybe the unemployment rate would tick up a little bit, and about 120,000 on average. Well, the number comes in at 204,000.
Hmm.
You got to scratch your head about it and say, now, what is that about? Because they were expecting about 120.
And what happened? And they're not doing a census again or anything.
who knows? But they, you know, who knows what they counted, what they didn't count, what if it's late? You know, we've had late numbers from different states over the last several months, and the unemployment rate ticked up to 7.3. But the interesting thing about this is that even though we had 200,000 new jobs created and the unemployment rate ticked up a little bit higher, what's really interesting about this is that the labor participation rate dropped sharply. You should have been the other way around. You should have really must have moved. So I would assume that we should have more or less seen 7.5, 7.6% unemployment if we didn't have that situation, which is, you know, and then on top of the other labor participation rates. And a lot of the numbers that came in, a lot of the jobs that came in were part-time, so it's possible there was some advanced holiday hiring going on. Because don't forget, the hiring for the holidays starts with the sales, and the sales start earlier and earlier, right? So...
I've already noticed some people are Christmas. They're pushing the Christmas already.
Yeah. Walmart is going to be opening up early on Thanksgiving, and just a whole bunch of stores are going to be going that route. You know, it's like what the car dealers did years ago, the car manufacturers. It used to be that you'd get your car, you'd go see the new models. What was it? October, November for the next year, right?
They changed the whole model for that.
August.
Yeah, and then they don't change the cars as much as they used to.
Right.
Because
they don't want to have to retool the manufacturing facilities. Save money on that. So what's interesting is, and I think this is really great, thank you so much, all of the retailers, because it's great for Jewish people, this whole opening up early on Thanksgiving. Because this year, which is very different than most years, and I don't think it happens very often, Hanukkah is falling on the same – the first day of Hanukkah is falling on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I know. It's almost as though they changed Thanksgiving just – because Thanksgiving is pretty – isn't it usually before the 28th?
It is the – whatever, the third Thursday, isn't it? Isn't that what always it is?
I guess that's what it is.
Yeah. So – but of course, the Jewish calendar runs on the moon. You know, it is a lunar calendar. So sometimes it gets a little wacky, and it's, you know, earlier and earlier. So you get a little bit of a later Thanksgiving and a much earlier Hanukkah. So now the sales are for the Jews.
There you have it.
There you go. It's always the Jews, right?
It's always something.
Always us. All right, now. So I did also put on this, and I got to put this on the website. This is really cool. There was a very good visualization and graphically intense look at the job situation and what the jobs reports really mean and the historical reference of where the jobs have gone over the years. And you can see a really interesting change in the dynamic of the jobs from, let's say, professionals or certain areas like full-time accounting or maybe even some management to a much different, more service-oriented, much lower-paid employment situation through this. And this is over by Bloomberg put this out. And you may want to just click on it and look at it just quickly.
But it's a
pretty cool little entry they did there. Looks nice.
Which one of these things is it?
It says a great look at the job situation.
Ah, it's way at the top.
Right there. So yeah, I was looking at this earlier today and I thought it was really interesting. So as you're looking at that, I'll mention a couple of things before we get to some of the technology, because there's a lot of little technology things going on here. That was one nasty storm in the Philippines.
That's what I'd say.
Yeah. You know where it went, right? Do you remember I was in the Philippines? It went right over that town.
Ha!
I'm not kidding. It took about 2 days. They were 8 hours bailing out water from their houses, and you know they didn't get hit that hard, but this city, this Tacloban...
Yeah.
Just destroyed. This is another island over. And a total of 9 million people affected. This is it was one of the strongest storms, if not the strongest typhoon, on record, supposedly. I mean, 195 to 200 mile an hour sustained winds? That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, we don't really pay that much attention to the stuff that happens in the on that border.
Over there.
Yeah.
Over there.
Over there.
Over
the there. Asian storms are not of much interest to the American news-reading public.
No. Although Anderson Cooper is over there. He's doing, you know, he goes, he's, if there is a catastrophe and loss of human life in the large numbers, he goes.
Yeah, well, he likes to take vacations.
Who's going to take a vacation in a place that just blew down?
It's the stopovers.
Oh, I see. And maybe it's a private jet. Who knows?
I don't think CNN's got the budget for that anymore. I think maybe they used to.
Well, here's the deal. I think this is kind of interesting. In Guyana, in Samar, there was a 40,000 population, and it's totally just destroyed. In Tacloban, there was largely flattened by the storm, and the storm surge came. That was a big problem, by the way. The storm surge created a big problem. There's a lot of tin houses there, a lot of these makeshift kind of metal hut kind of things. Well, they started floating, or not floating, but they started going with the storm surge, and they were just cutting people, you know, and really causing a lot of damage that way. Huh. And that was a big problem also, was the big flooding, and it was just pushing all this debris, and all the stuff that was in there was just getting, you know, people really, really hurt. There's piles of people on the roadside in there. I mean, that is probably the worst area entirely. Then there's Cebu, which is a pretty popular place. Some towns suffered about 80 to 90% of damage, and there's a town of Baco, which is 80% underwater. They're figuring that it could be upwards of 10,000 people that are dead from this, and this is pretty awful.
Huh.
Pretty awful.
Yeah, it is. It's terrible. I've been preoccupied now with this crazy thing that Bloomberg put together. This is the most interactive, crazy thing.
It's interesting, right?
Yeah, I mean, actually, we're going to link to it in the show, in the website, because this is just, you can spend a lot of time on this thing.
Yeah, because everything you touch does something, right?
Yeah, it just wiggles. Somebody really put some effort into this thing. Mm-hmm. They got some techie doing this kind of thing.
What is it? A flash, do you think? What is that?
It looks like it's, since it's running in the browser the way it is, I don't know if it's flash or if it's HTML5 or, I don't know. I have no idea. Oh, actually, if I had the Google browser, I could find out by just clicking on that. It lets you look at the code.
Oh, yeah, right.
But I don't.
All right, so moving on. The point I'm bringing up about the Philippines is this, that just as we help out people, well, you're humanitarians, and, you know, maybe you want to think about giving a little donation to maybe the Red Cross or to some other particular charitable organization.
Well, find that's somebody besides the Red Cross, which tends to take the money and then they dole it out to everybody.
Okay, well, we're going to leave it to you, gang. And if you want to write into us and maybe put some comments on the show notes for this episode of where it may be a good place to send some money for the Philippines, and, you know, other than yourself, by the way, you know, please do so. We'd really appreciate that. Now, Apple.
Good old Apple.
Good old Apple. They're coming out with this new – well, first of all, they have this curved glass they're working on now.
And
they
get wow. Stop the presses.
By the way, I don't get the whole curved glass.
Curved glass. Ooh.
Sounds cool. What's the point of that? It just wraps or something?
It's like the – I don't know. Have you seen an HTC One or the new Moto? They have curved backs, and they kind of like rock. It's kind of cool. And so I think they've decided – somebody's decided to make the curved front and curved back, or curved front and flat back. I don't have any idea, but I just don't see that this is the kind of thing that people – everyone's all worked up about it. Oh, curved glass. Oh, my God. It's just – I just don't get what the preoccupation is. So what?
Well, if you – listen, curved glass, maybe they did the same thing when the first wine glass came out. That's curved. It's got a bit of a curve to it, and, you know, maybe they got bowls.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think it was the same kind of excitement?
Well, I hope not.
What do you mean? What if there was a time that there was no bowls and somebody says, hey, look at this. We have plates which are flat.
Yeah,
and now we're going to curve them, and now you can have it start a whole cereal industry.
Yeah, I think that this is pretty much on that same level.
Yeah, exactly. So now Apple also is coming out with this pressure-sensitive screen, which I guess if you press it hard, it does something.
You mean like the Wacom tablet has had out for the last, 20 years or 15 or 10, whatever?
I'm using one right now.
You are using a Wacom tablet with it? The cheapest tablets from the pad or whatever you want to call them, they're for using Photoshop. They've been pressure-sensitive forever.
Yeah. And actually, not only pressure-sensitive, but they're also sensitive to the angle. You know, you can kind of, if you wanted to say, put it straight up and down like a sharpened pen or pencil versus turning it on its side like you're using a pencil on its side. They know that too. So, okay, so two things down. Third, they came out with today announcement that there is the new iPad mini with the Retina display. That was the big excitement today.
Ooh.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And finally, that caught everybody off guard.
Yeah.
I bet you nobody expected that.
Right. They did now have another claim. This company is in court a lot, it seems, lately. They're facing a claim by a California inventor that a patent he holds covers key features of the iPhone. And he says that this company, NetArius, is invalid and blah, blah, blah. And it goes back to, I think, 1996 or 1995. And already they're saying, well, you know, we've had things even before that. So now there's I think it's like a $400 million. Or the last one they just threw out was about $400 million. And speaking about lawsuits, Starbucks, I don't know if you saw what's going on. Well, Starbucks and Johnson & Johnson got hit for another $4 billion just, I guess, today. But Starbucks said it's going to be paying Mondelez International about $2.76 billion. You know, $2.76 billion would be like the end of companies a few years ago.
Yeah, no, they'd be done.
You know, if you ever saw a number like that, you'd be like, oh, now.
Yeah, these guys waltz through this. They waltz right through it. Oh, right. What, the check? Will you take a check?
Right.
Oh, wait a minute. I may have it on me.
Right. That's like hitting a car and then saying, hey, you know, the equivalent of the guy says to you, I'll take 100 cash. All right, hey, good, take it, go. Versus, I can't even imagine what would have they have done if the $2.7 billion didn't have to be paid. Now, here's what's interesting about this. So this is over the fact that Starbucks went and sold their coffee in stores. And there was a deal, I guess it was with Kraft prior. And there's about $2.23 billion in damages, $527 million in interest and attorney's costs. Man, these attorneys are getting fat on this stuff, right?
Mm.
And Mondelez is going to use this money to do a share buyback. I like that.
Well, that's kind of a twist.
So, you know, it's going to help out Mondelez because they get the money. Then they're going to be buying shares back. Starbucks, I got to look at what Starbucks did on this news. You know, probably without me looking and being just as cynical as I am, they probably went up.
Yeah, because they got it out of the way.
They got it. They were whacked. Yeah, oh, they were whacked.
Oh, that makes it
0.14%.
Oh, geez.
Although after hours, they were down about 1.4%. I mean, how long would it take them to make $2.7 billion back? I mean, that's a lot of money.
What's their sales? Let's take a look.
Yeah, let's see.
There's that chart.
All right, their sales are coming up in 1 second. I should probably look on my system here. Okay, let's see. The profit, operating margin, returns. It's on this page that I'm looking at.
I get it. What's the symbol?
SBUX. I'll bring up Bloomberg in the background.
Okay, let's see here.
A lot of dead air here.
Yeah, well, that's the way it is with a podcast. What do you expect? So they did, you see, the cap is $60 billion, sale, revenue, $14.89 billion. So
$14 billion, so this is what? This is
20%. Two months. Two and a half months of...
So let's raise their pricing, I guess, right?
Two and a half months of, it's hard-earned money, seems like. Huh.
So that's going on.
Actually,
now,
it won't even be that. They had $3.23 billion in cash, and now they just write a check.
Right. And J&J was also hit. Let's see what happened there. Yeah, they see down 0.77%. And they were hit for, they're paying $4 billion settlement over their hip implants.
Oh.
This is the second deal. Johnson & Johnson has something recently also.
Yeah, they're getting slammed. What's their symbol?
Stock, J&J. Okay. Now look at the stock for stock that's being slammed. I want you to take a very important look at this. This is a stock that we just said is being slammed, right? You know,
yeah.
You got to pay $2 billion here, $4 billion there.
Yeah.
And would you agree that the stock is, you know, if for lack of an exact number, close to an all-time high?
Well, it's just a little under the all-time high. I mean, in January it was around 70, and now it's pushing toward 100. It's actually pushing toward 95, I guess. But 100 is just next stop. And it's just very straight. It's like a nice. It's a nice chart of growth.
Mm-hmm.
These companies are overpriced. There's no doubt about
well,
it.
Well, the bottom line is, though, this is after a $4 billion. And then there was another $2.2 billion on the 4th. So you got $6 billion. $6 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, that's enormous.
Yeah.
And the stock takes a little hiccup like it was, I don't know, just... I don't know what's going on with some of these things. I mean, if nothing else, let's just focus on the fact that it's a $6 billion loss for the company.
Yeah, that's a lot. Insanity rules.
Yeah. Okay. Now, here's something sad. I know you're going to probably, think this is sad at least. EW Scripps, you know who they are, right?
Yeah, of course.
Scripps Howard News Service?
Yeah.
It's over. Done. Kaput. They were around since 1917, and they were feeding papers and various...
I had an article that went out on their service once.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you find it, maybe it'll be worth something, because now the company's out of business.
This is in my computer.
Oh. They've been around since World War I, and they're going to be shutting down, becoming the latest symbol of the reader shift from print media.
Well, how can operations like Associated Press and Reuters and the New York Times Syndicate and the Washington Post Syndicate survive, and these guys can't? What's wrong with this picture? That's the way I always look at these things.
Well, if you look at the other ones that you just mentioned, they all have major online presence, and they also have subscribers to their particular whether it's print or online. And Scripps was more of a service, right? So they were feeding the information to these other services, and the other services were buying them. And I guess everybody's, said finally, well, we're going to do it ourselves, or, you could scrape the web for everything, or just watch the other guy and we'll just copy his news.
Well, seems like they didn't have the forward-looking management, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, I would say...
I mean, I've given, talks, not recently, because it's like, I guess it's a passé topic, in the past about the future of newspapers, in the... all the mess that they're in, and that they don't have them, don't even know it. And it's amazing to see the reaction. They just think I'm full of crap. It's just this weird. I couldn't. It's hard to explain.
Well,
we're doing fine. We're fine.
Yeah. Right. Not going to change a thing. This internet stuff is no. We're still going to put
gimmick.
It together and send it out by fax. It's a gimmick. I thought that was really interesting. But what was more disturbing was, I think, the weekend's news. It was, I don't know, maybe it was a channel that was on that was in the background that I was watching. I don't know what it was, but it was very disturbing to see, first of all, the retraction of the Benghazi story by NBC. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. I'm not sure what retraction we're talking about. I know there was something...
NBC reported that there was some kind of a flap in over this Benghazi situation, where there was maybe the president didn't do his job, or the briefings weren't right.
Yeah, there was something. I saw this, and I kind of didn't think much about it one way or the other.
Well, this is a big issue. I mean, this is something that the Republicans were all over, and now NBC is retracting it. The whole story. This was a major, major problem. And, it was just pounded, and they retracted that. So that was the first thing. And the second thing was this new pay for news, where the basically the news organizations.
Okay. Now I remember. This is actually, was a while back to me. Yeah, they Laura Logan – had this guy on who was the Benghazi guy who volunteered himself to talk about what happened in the Benghazi attack and claiming mm-hmm. he was there. He was never there. The guy was just a kind of a phony. And so they did a whole interview with him, and she, she got in trouble for good reason, mm-hmm. I think. I really don't trust her anyway. She is she's just a little, seems a little sketchy to me. She's the one who was supposedly, you know, fondled and almost raped in Egypt in Tahrir Square. And then she took some time off after getting beat up or something. I don't even know if that's true. But she was also the one who was incredibly bent out of shape and made a big fuss about the Rolling Stone article on McChrystal.
Oh, really?
Big, huge fuss. And she, because she thought she should have the story. I don't know what her problem was, but she hated the writer and all the rest of it. And now this. And yeah, no, I'm very familiar with it.
The world's against her.
Well, there she got in trouble with because of this interview. She didn't
vet
the guy. I mean, the guy just full of crap. Just made it up.
Right.
Yeah.
And this went to the political level. I mean, this wasn't just this was big stuff. So that was first. And there was a pay for news flow that I thought was really kind of ridiculous. And then I don't know. I guess I don't follow this, but this Canadian senator
you're thinking of the mayor of Toronto.
What is the story?
That fat guy.
Was he really doing crack in open public and all that?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I think he's bipolar or something's wrong with the guy.
Well, something's wrong.
Because he got caught doing something else, threatening to kill somebody and on tape, and he was like drunk. His excuse for everything is he's drunk, which I think is a funny excuse.
It's hysterical, especially because I think they reelected him.
Yeah, yeah. And according to the polls, his status went up. His approval rating went up like 5 points after the crack cocaine incident, supposedly. I question some of this, but I can't imagine. Toronto's a fairly cosmopolitan town. I can't imagine them really keeping this guy in office much longer.
And then finally, there was, I guess, the final thing that really got me was, I guess there was some kind of a leak, quote unquote, leak of some information on Chris Christie.
This I don't know.
Yeah, so
I know they're going to have to do something about him, so they're going to probably smear him some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, so, there was a leak, and you know, the word leak, I used to believe, leaks no longer have any kind of, they don't hold anything for me other than the fact that I know that it was purposeful.
Yeah, no, all leaks are fixed. It's fixed.
You know?
It's rigged.
So he said today that the former Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney called immediately after details of a new book about last year's vice presidential vetting process became public Thursday. He said he was really embarrassed and all that. The governor went on to say that the leaks were a highly secretive process and were very disappointing. I think it's a complete violation of trust of me and the spirit of which I entered that process. The governor's comments came on this. Basically, there was some kind of leak of the data and the information about, you know, the vetting process and what was involved there. And he was on a short list of Romney's vice presidential running mates. But during the vetting process, the governor's people were stunned by the garish controversies lurking in the shadows of his record, which are littered with potential landmines.
What, Christie?
Yep. Yep. They said that he was a Christie was a fun.
Set off some of those landmines, people. I want to see what they are.
Yeah.
Talk.
Yeah, they said he was a fundraising dynamo, but he annoyed the campaign over his demands for expensive hotels and private jets. Yeah. And there's probably some more stuff there too. But the point is, it's supposed to be private. You know, it as private as can be. Now, to the rescue.
If you saw the size of Chris Christie, you know why he probably wants a private jet.
He should listen. I'm just saying that for image sake, and I'm just talking about strictly here for the image and for if he's going to run for president, he should shave up a little bit.
Yeah, well, it might kill him. That's the problem at this point.
Uh-oh.
We just have to think of Howard Taft. Let's see. I think what did he weigh in at?
He was a big boy.
Yeah, he's a very similar shape as Christie. Big, big guy, you know, with a big barrel chest and huge.
Yeah. Fattest president of the United States was Taft. He held many titles, but fattest.
He was 6 foot. And you don't, I'm looking at the wiki, or one of the wiki things. I'm not seeing his weight. It must be in here somewhere.
I'm looking at some curious facts about U.S. presidents. let's see. James Madison, George Washington, James Adams. Okay, let's keep going here. He was like 14, right? So,
okay. Taft. Lincoln. Oh, where's his weight? You know, they should put weight and height in these wiki entries. I don't get it.
Well, here's something. As history unfolds, the fattest president of the United States. So it says that Taft had a new bed constructed at his friend Todd Lincoln's house because the springs in his original were no good. 320 pounds.
Ah, okay.
He was a collegiate wrestler at 225 and by all accounts quite athletic. He steadily gained weight after graduating college, eventually ballooning to 320 pounds in 1905, at which he began his first diet.
Yeah,
I'm looking. He was advanced before the era of diet books and DVDs.
Yeah, and he probably and he didn't do any good, of course. And he, see, how long did he live?
Well, he did lose some pounds. He lost. He always had those big coats on, those overcoats, you know.
Yeah, and it made him look bigger.
Oh, here's his weight. I got a whole chart of his weight.
You know, and these weights are probably low because it was pretty embarrassing to be that heavy.
You know, if you rearrange,
he died at 72, which is about the average age of death back in that. So the weight didn't hurt his health.
But here's the kicker. If you use an anagram and you change the letters of his last name,
yeah,
you know what you get?
Taft.
Fat
with two T's. Yeah, it's true. It's good. Fat. Well, he was fat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, now let's talk about some things. First of all, I got to say, congratulations to Microsoft
for eliminating stacked ranking.
What is? How do you like that? Because you and I talked about this, and we said what a horrible way to demotivate or to unmotivate or to just absolutely create a working environment where nobody is going to be working as a team, right?
No, you're going to be working to save your job. That's right. What's going on at Yahoo right now, which is why I'm very suspicious of the stock price.
Well, Microsoft is getting rid of it. And one of the first companies I think that I can recall that came out and really spoke about the fact that they're out of this whole, you know, evaluation on a bell curve, and they're seeking to foster more teamwork and collaboration. So that's kind of good.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens. But, you know, they've already gotten rid of all the good people, so I don't know what, you know, now they got to start over.
Right, because the previous stack ranking system required a fixed number of workers on a team to be graded poorly.
Yeah.
How stupid is that? I don't get it. That's just so stupid.
And the worst part was when you got this, there's a certain ranking that I believe if you're like, say, 10 people and you're the two poorest workers, you mm-hmm. can't transfer. This was like a little gotcha. So if you were in a bad situation and you were getting these bad ratings, you couldn't transfer. You couldn't transfer to a different division or anything. You were stuck.
Wasn't that the whole point, though, to slim down the company?
I don't know. The whole thing was – it's an idiotic process. It's probably good for a turnaround situation where you got to really cut fast because you can just do it blood, you know, without any – conscience, but mm-hmm. it's not for an established company to be using something like this. It's crazy.
Well, this is a point of reference. Let's just say this. The difference between stack ranking, which is you have to grade people poorly and, you know, maybe two of the bottom are out or whatever it may be, and there's something also different about the fact that what we're talking about here is they're using a bell curve, which is, of course, you know, the, you know, you get that center part.
They're just saying that. I have talked to a number of people about it. All they're using a version of stacked ranking that's a little different, and they mm-hmm. call it this. It's bull crap.
Right. Brighten up. And they're going to get rid of the fixed scale. So I guess they're going to have floating scale? I don't know. Now, Twitter, you know, had the big IPO. What?
Some TV thing started playing. Anyway, go on.
Okay.
I think it got on the recording, but we'll find out when
I didn't hear anything.
Oh.
Twitter came out with their IPO, of course, and it was up, I don't know, it was up 80% or so the first day. It touched just at 50.
It was rocking.
Yep.
If you could get in and out of that thing, you got something going on.
Yeah, well, the problem was that it started to fall quite rapidly right afterwards.
Of course.
And I think it was down, from the high, it came down from 50, and then it came down. It was down another 8%, then down another 2%.
Yeah, it's a $2 stock as far as I'm concerned.
Yep. Here's something interesting, though, because I don't think we talked about this. Here's some information I got from a colleague at a big firm. We'll just leave it at that, okay? There's 28 million shares to buy paired on 4/30, meaning that there was a lot to buy at the market. Usually the retail does that, right? So if you kind of did a calculation, this is pre-opening of the offering. So the gray market put it at about a $43 price on the open, which was kind of close. Now, 10 institutional investors got 50% of the overall allocation. Hmm. 10. And the IPO was 30 times oversubscribed. They heard that, and when they use the word hearing, it's what it is. The top 30 accounts of this firm got 75% of the deal, all mutual funds. So maybe there's not going to be a lot of flipping there. But in Facebook, almost 50% went to retail. So you could look at this a couple different ways. First of all, maybe there was some payback here to the institutions for the drudging they took on the Facebook deal, mm-hmm. right? So now, instead of allocating this to the retail, where you go in and you give your best clients an opportunity to buy the IPO, and then you split it up and you look at the demand, they said, you know what, we're going to keep more of this because we want to get a little bit of a payback for the losses we had to take on Facebook. Now, that's first of all. Second of all,
that's like they did some a collateralized book deal.
Yeah,
where you have your old book has to, you since it lost money, your new book has to make up for. What has Twitter got to do with Facebook? But okay, go on.
Because it's an IPO that was hot. Doesn't matter the name of the stock. It was an IPO that was hot. That if you can get in at 23, you knew that it was going to be around 43. So you hold back a lot and you keep it for yourself.
Yeah, and then you make some quick money, and now you get out.
Right. The other thing was that what was the other point here? That it was such a large amount of institutions that overall held it. So I don't know. There was a lot of oversubscribing. There's a lot of buying at the market, and that's what holds up the stock. Of course, we'll see what happens now moving forward, because now you enter into a time when they're not talking about it every single minute of every single day on CNBC.
Ah. Hooray.
Thank God. I know. The only thing that I was happy about Twitter, and I was really thankful about, that they weren't talking about the Fed every single day. and the tapering and the not tapering. And every single guest, do you think the Fed will taper? It's like, guys, move on. It's like an infatuation. It's move on. They're going to taper. They're not going to taper. Why you? And then they start bringing on the Fed speaker, some of the Fed guys they bring on to talk to them for like 2 hours.
I thought you stopped watching CNBC.
I only watch it every once in a while in the morning when I'm kind of getting dressed, maybe just to see what's going on. Or I get their alerts every once in a while. That's pretty much it. But no, it's just very annoying. Mm. Now, here's something I want you to focus in on. We've been talking about what's the deal with this market? Why is this market keep on levitating? It drops and then it gets picked up, and then it drops and in intraday or intraweek. So I did a little research, and we talked about this a little bit last week, but I wanted to show you on a chart the real numbers here. So what if you look at that flows chart, you see that little graphic there?
I'm looking. Hold on.
So put this together with ICI data, and we looked at last month.
Well, there's another one of your this is not the— Okay, I'm looking. No. I'm looking. You tell me what I'm looking.
That was a left-handed something.
It's like that one
crappy chart.
That chart. That one chart.
Really, I just can't stand it.
The good news, bad news chart, whatever it is called.
So this is
what am I looking at?
Okay, this is the estimated flows to long-term mutual funds. So this is the amount of money net that came in or left to specific types of mutual funds during the week. So each column is a week. So you look at 10-2, 2013, we see that in total equities, about $3 billion was extracted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that was put— – they reallocated that into— – let's say you don't see it go into the bond funds, not much. But they reallocated that into some of the world funds and probably cash. 10-9, another $3 billion. Overall domestic really got hit hard, but then they started putting it into the world, into ex-US, if you will. And they also started taking out a significant amount, if you look at that, in the bond area. 16, less money, more money was taken out of the bonds and rotated into stocks. You see what's happening there?
Yeah, yeah.
On the 23rd, we had a tremendous amount of money come in towards the end of the month from retail. And that's between that and the 30th, you could see just a walloping amount of money that came into equity funds and out of bond funds.
Yeah.
So, and then if you look at the bottom, it shows you the net, the total.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was money taken out, money taken out, and then, but $18 billion on the 23rd and the weeks of the 23rd and ending 23rd and 30th were actually put into the market. So no wonder why you get a little bit of a market spike there.
Yeah, though it makes sense. So that's what's going on. Who's ICI?
I think it's the Investment Company Institute.
Hmm.
They track this stuff. So that's what's going on. And you can see if you look at the charts along with that, just a simple chart looking at the S&P, it correlates pretty well. And that's another thing why you see the bids in the morning. You know, you could have a pretty ugly market in the pre-markets and around, around the world. And then all of a sudden, 9:30 rings. It's like Pavlovian dogs. They just start buying. Why is that? Is it really people buying, or is it more so that all these mutual funds got money in the day before? They don't buy or sell until 4 p.m. And then they have to redeploy the assets. So they just start buying. That's what they do.
I see your other chart down here is the weird one.
This is bizarre. Want to talk about Bitcoin?
Well, just for a minute before we jump, we're getting to the point where we should jump to our stocks in five. But yeah.
So Bitcoin, you know, the Winklevoss boys are out there doing their thing. They're really big into this whole Bitcoin thing. You know, Bitcoin's had a lot of ups and downs this year. I know Adam's real into it, right? Are you really into the Bitcoin?
No, he has Bitcoins. He's not into them. But he says as soon as he gets to $1,000, he's selling his Bitcoins.
Well, I gave you two charts here. I gave you the Bitcoin value year to date. And if you remember, it was this year or last, there was a big crash. Remember that? A couple of the companies went out of business?
Yeah.
Well, here's
this
the first.
Is the most, this has to be the most rigged or potentially rigged market there is.
What's interesting is they want to talk about using this as an alternative currency. And it goes from about.
I'd rather use Swiss francs. How's that for an alternative currency?
I'd rather use ballpark francs, to be honest with you, than this.
Woo!
Thank you very much. Nice setup. A little hit of the softball. If you look at the price, what was it? Maybe $20 at the beginning of the year? And now it's, I don't know, it's at a high of 350, 360?
Yeah, something or 400.
What kind of currency does that kind of appreciation? I put another chart there that shows you the percent appreciation. That's just takes the cake right there, right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's like 3,000% gain since the beginning of the year after it went – it took about a 50% hit in April. And then it came down. It went sideways. And then starting in – I guess it was when in October, and I don't know what the reason for this was. In October, it just started skyrocketing. And this is, you know, when you talk about percentages, this is just absolutely incredible. You went from you did about a triple this last month and a half, 2 months. And I don't understand why people would want to use this as a or say this is a currency if it could have that kind of volatility. What kind of insane individual is going to say this is a currency and use this as a core currency if you have that kind of volatility?
It's crazy.
It's nuts. You want to call it an investment? You want to call it – you know what? This is
rank speculation. That's what I call it.
Yeah. And the problem is also it's like – playing poker online when they were all looking over your cards and they were sending people in there to trade, you know, play against you?
Yeah.
This is the same kind of thing.
Right. Total scam.
Yep. All right. And finally, before we get to our stocks, there's a couple things I just want to mention here. Amazon starting Sunday delivery, which is interesting. Only 50,000 people signed up for the healthcare plans on the healthcare government.
How are they going to make Sunday deliveries? They don't have – Amazon or UPS doesn't work on Sunday. USPS doesn't work on Sunday. I don't know that FedEx works on Sunday. Who works on Sunday?
Is the United States Postal Service doing this?
They're gonna deliver stuff for Amazon?
On Sundays. Weren't they just
closing down on Saturdays? I thought they were closing down on Saturdays, and now they're going to – okay.
Yep. Hey, like that.
I don't understand what the point of it is, but it's great.
Yep. And Christmas came early to some shoppers that were on the Walmart.com site. It seems that there was a weird glitch that happened, and some things like TVs, treadmills were selling for a fraction of the price, which, for example, a treadmill which usually cost many hundred dollars, was priced at $33. LCD computer monitors were $9.
No, and I should have bought one.
Yeah, I know. We find out late. But people did pretty well with that. And finally, it seems that, well, Tesla's doing all sorts of things, but we'll go to Barron's. Barron says Netflix could plunge 50%. I don't know what time frame they mean. I don't know if there's going to be a stock split. I don't know what the story is, but they're back on that bandwagon. And you know, it is very pricey for what it is. For goodness sakes, it's videos.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it doesn't seem impossible for other people to do it. I mean, Amazon is doing a kind of a version of it.
Right. Well, there's a lot. You got Hulu. You got all sorts of people out there. And the one thing that I really am bothered about, you told me how great the Kevin Spacey series was on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So House of Cards.
Yeah, so I go on there figuring, you know what? There's going to be a little, maybe a genre area that says Netflix Originals, and I can click it, and you can't, there's no such thing. There's no genre of Netflix Originals. You got to, like, know the name of the darn thing to get it. How stupid is that?
That's very stupid. It's very poor marketing.
I don't really understand it. I mean,
Because they make a big deal of it, trying to make it associative, and then they don't make the association themselves. It's ridiculous.
I don't. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but I did search and I asked a few people that I know and they all agreed that it's not anywhere to be found. So I don't know what other particular – I know there's the Orange is the New Black or Black is the New Orange or whatever that is, and there's a couple others. But I guess I have to search for it somehow, some way. So anyway, with that, let's go to the stocks. And we're going to talk about the DH Unplugged Weekly Stocks, where we go and try to find some great opportunities in a game style where – we will be long or short, and we will put the appropriate markdown on this spreadsheet that we have at Google that gives us live updates of it. And we have a 10% stop rule, or a trailing stop rule on it. And, of course, we also say that we don't recommend buying or selling any of these. This is a very risky endeavor. You'll lose all or part of your money, and we're not recommending this at all. If we do own this, or if clients have borrowed the company, or if John and myself own it, well, we'll put a little disclosure that we own it. Why don't you take it away, sir?
Well, it looks like the top thing on the list currently, if I can clear up here, is our joint pick, McGraw-Hill Financial, which is still one of the funnier picks we've made because we base it on government inaction. There were other kinds of they had a sword over their head, hanging over their head, and we ended up going long, figuring that the sword was bullcrap. And it was.
Yep.
Other than that, there's a lot of 25, 15% gains. A couple, we're still got a lot of red on here. Not too much. I mean, it's mostly green, but there's some weird red.
I mean, listen, since August, potash is up, how much there? 10%. Since September, your world wrestling is up 26%.
Yeah, that's good.
Now, these are quite amazing. Let's not forget that these are really substantial numbers
for the short period. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, I think that you look at this. I mean, even the ones that they're 2 weeks old. How old is? Let's see, 3 weeks old. Clifton and U.S. Steel up 15% apiece. The short on Facebook is 2 weeks old, up 9%. And look at, for example, Avis. Avis is up 6.5%, and we talked about it last week.
Yeah, that's pretty fast. But the one I picked last week, of course, is just did nothing, which is fine because that shows me that it's backing up so I can get a running start.
Yeah, now, exactly. It's a slow grower.
Yeah, so in that regard, yeah, we're actually doing quite well. Now, you're going to put Monsanto – you're going to short this week. And for the first time, I think, in the last, I don't know, 5 months, I'm going to short.
Ooh. Wow, that's interesting. What is giving you that vibe?
I'm shorting Twitter.
Oh, you can't really. I don't think you can really do it in real life. Well, at least I know I can't get shares. I tried.
Oh, you tried shorting it already?
It's not that I tried. It's that the system shows the red, which is just not available.
Okay,
I'm sure there's some folks out there, but it's a game.
It's a game. We're shorting a virtual Twitter that doesn't exist, so we can't.
Can we short bitcoins? How do we do that?
There's no. It's not traded on the stock market. It's a scam.
Yeah,
it's like shorting my next door neighbor. I mean, I can't do anything about that either.
How great would that be?
Yeah, they just short them. Hey, what happened to my house? Well, we shorted you and we cleaned up.
Bitcoin remains. Once again.
Anyway, I'm going to put. Can we play? Will you let me do Twitter?
Yeah.
Here it is.
Here it is right here. There's a Bitcoin fund.
Ooh.
Let's see. Second market. I don't know if we can actually trade that. No, that's the other guy, I think. Oh, this stupid Forbes thing. I hate to put the. Second market launches first U.S. Bitcoin fund. And invest to buy into the river without having to buy the digital currency. Okay. Bitcoin Investment Trust. Is it open and private trust? Okay. Yeah. It's private. But what the story is really all about is that the Winklevoss twins were beaten again because that's what they wanted to do. They were beaten to the punch again by somebody who put this out. That's the story on that.
Those guys are famous.
Yeah, exactly. So you're going to short this. Okay. Now, let me tell you. The reason why, and this could go against the grain in terms of our discussion with McGraw-Hill. You saw the story about the trans fats and all that, right? This whole thing that they're going to be curtailing.
Right. You're going to short Monsanto, which I think is risky.
Okay. Yeah, the stock looks okay. It's hitting against resistance. I agree with you.
But
which could be a problem.
And I think you're going against the thesis that we developed with the McGraw-Hill thing, and I think it's extremely risky. Yep. I'm not in on this one for sure.
Let's be sure. Let's be clear. The theory is that these horrendous and overbearing regulations that are being drafted for one reason or another, whether it's health or money, whatever it is, are things that should, if they go into effect, would really be a problem. For example, Monsanto controls the soybean market in terms of seed and other various areas. And
yep.
then they're talking about – and soybean is a major – the trans fatty acids. Is that what it's called, trans fatty acids? No, trans – not trans fat. It's trans fat or something like that.
Yeah, it's called a trans fat. I should be able to just blurt out exactly what it means, but it's some sort of thing.
It's trans. I'm looking up trans fat.
It's bad for you.
The FDA is the FDA trans fat ban, the donut and the small business. They're going to they're going to be trying to get rid of this, and it's incredible how much people eat now. 4 million acres of soy. Actually, this is a story from tonight. That's interesting. 4 million acres of soy, of annual soybean production. If the regulators move too quickly to ban the trans fats in processed foods, according to the American Soybean Association. So the theory is that maybe there would be this incredible amount of reduction in the planting and the all that. So
this is the most outrageous thing you've ever brought into the game. If you win on this one, I'll be stunned, because those guys are so deeply embedded with the government, Monsanto lobbyists, that I can't imagine anything bad happening to them, and even this thing passing, it probably won't even pass.
So the stock hasn't taken too much of a hit from the discussion of this, and it just happened, this discussion, last week or so.
Right.
But we'll see. I mean, the good news is it's only a game. The better news is that it's only a game.
Yeah, it's only a game.
It's my pride.
it's your pride.
And what was the reason we're going to put down for Twitter being short? Like, what is your thesis?
It's a $2 stock. That's what.
$2 stock. Got it. Perfect. Anything else? You have another one?
No. There's a couple of things out there that are some insider stuff. But I'm not going to. I'm now starting to think that we've been doing so well going long for so long. And today's show, despite my inability to clear my throat, today's show kind of highlighted a lot of this craziness with the Starbucks and Johnson & Johnson thing that you pointed out, which makes me begin to think that maybe it's time to start looking back at the shorts. Maybe it's time to just to wait for this thing to do a big correction, which I was thinking it was going to do in October, never did.
Well, remember what I said last week. Not that I say this a bit tongue in cheek, but remember I said that whatever is the seasonality has been kind of taken upside down. It's supposed to have a bad month, October, and then you're supposed to have all sorts of problems because in the beginning of the year you had the sequestration, then you're going to have the government shutdown, then you blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it's been upside down.
So it's been upside down. So in theory, they have the Santa Claus rally, or at least the end of year rally, where there's a chase and all that going on. And who knows if they're just going to take it and shove it the other way? Because if you think about it, if the investor, the retail investor, thought that was going to be in the case, so they just piled their money in, right? And then all of a sudden they start getting selling coming on. Maybe they're going to get a little cold feet.
Maybe. We'll see.
We shall see. Well, Monsanto short.
So if you make money on this Monsanto play, it's because the whole market's going to turn around and you're just going to be looking like a genius. But
yeah. Well, I did my research here.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens. All right. I will talk to you next week. I'll also mention one thing, please. There is another webinar on the Trader's Playbook over at Trigger Charts on Thursday. Limited seating, but if you want to attend, it's free. And you'll learn some really cool things from some pros on trading. And, of course, John, what's the name of your book again?
Inside Track 2013. It's available on Amazon.com. Or you can go to Inside Track the Book.
So if I order it on Friday, even though it's digital download, even could I get it maybe on Sunday somehow by delivery?
It's only an e-book.
Yeah, but I want it delivered.
How are you going to get it delivered?
Well, somebody could print it. They'll deliver it to me. And I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I guess somebody could print it. Yeah, I guess it's possible.
I want it delivered by the United States Postal Service on a Sunday. What do you think that's going to cost?
I don't believe it'll be too cheap. But it gives the post office something to do. This sounds daffy.
I don't know either.
What do you need stuff on? I mean, okay, well, maybe. Maybe they'll be. Maybe Amazon should bite the bullet and just buy the UPS company.
Right. I'm with you on this.
Let's take a look at this. What is the UPS stock price?
UPS itself? Oh, no. UPS have been moving. They've been moving. UPS and
maybe on the rumors of a buyout by Amazon.
Really? So Amazon may buy. That's interesting.
Let's see what
we got. Let's take a look at this. I think it's in the 100-something.
Let's see.
UPS is the symbol. Symbol is UPS.
UPS.
Yep.
Yeah, obviously. 99.82. It's headed toward 100. I guess it's bounced off the top a couple times. Way up from 70 in January. Let's see. What are they
saying? I mean, they'd have to spend. What are they going to spend? They're going to spend the total cap is $43 billion.
I'm looking at the enterprise value of $97.95 and the market cap of $93. So they'd have to.
Cap is $93 you have? I have market cap at $43.
I have a market cap at $93.
On UPS?
United Parcel Service, yeah.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. What do you want? Yahoo or something?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I'm going to look that up.
Whatever the case, it would cost them a bundle.
Yeah,
but they could leverage it.
Yeah, and it probably they would put their.
I mean, Apple could
higher.
Just buy it if they wanted. But
yeah, they could. They have enough money. Maybe they'll get together. Maybe they get together. And what's happening here? Here we go. I'm kind of surprised. There's such a differential in the market cap of these two different pages here. Market cap, $93 billion. Yeah, something's not right. Something is not right. We can look at Bloomberg. Oh man. Let's see.
It sounds more like it should be $93 billion and 40.
UPS. Let's see.
How many
market cap of let's see. I think I can pull this up.
Do you ever reboot that Bloomberg terminal?
You have to go in and out all the time.
Yeah, the revenue is 55.
Market cap $93 billion.
Yeah.
Yep. The other one's wrong.
What were you looking at?
I just happened to be on Google Finance.
Google Finance? That's not good.
Google Finance. We should call them.
Nah.
No. Let them be wrong.
Yeah.
What else are they wrong about? Now, by the way, this is a really good lesson. Seriously. Because a lot of people just take whatever is going on whatever particular site they look at and say that's just the deal, that's the right information. A lot of these sites have really bad information, and you know what, if you want to just get free information and you're okay with the fact that it may be wrong, okay, then more power to you. And I think we're all of us have gotten too used to not paying for things.
Yeah, that's true. It's a real problem. But nothing we're going to solve. Yeah. On that note, next Tuesday I have to. I'm going to be in your neck of the woods. I'm going to be in Orlando.
I'll meet you.
You could.
I could.
It's a little bit of a drive, apparently.
3 hours. Only 3 hours.
So
when's the last time we actually were face to face?
Yeah, we should probably get a camera. I should go to. I need to go to Fort Lauderdale. Go to Miami. Fool around. But I'm going to be in Orlando for a couple of days, and so I'll be flying on Tuesday. So we'll put we off next week.
Okay, that's fine. You don't want to come down to Fort Lauderdale because yesterday it seemed like some of my people couldn't get into work because or anywhere because they shut down the road. There was a guy just waving a rifle in the middle of the road.
Oh, good for him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like Florida. Crazy fun, crap in Florida.
Fun. Yep. All right, I will see you next week.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.